A podcast that shines a light on the positive, healthy, hopeful projects going on in Humboldt County. We'll talk about things that are happening to help everyone live a better life and what things you can do in your corner of the world. Look, we know about the problems. We talk about them, read about them in the news, and see it every day too. That's what drives us to want better and to be part of the good. My name is Juliette Ferry, and I will be your host of the Humboldt Healthcast, which is another community project of the Humboldt IPA here in Eureka. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and today I'm talking with Brenda Elvine Christ from the Breast and GYN Health Project located on 8th Street in Arcata. And she is the co-client services director there. And before we get started, I want to mentally prepare you for the heavy echo you'll hear on one side of the conversation. A lot of us are working from home, and all homes and equipment we're using are different. So instead of losing time and stressing people out to re-record and edit, we just decided to go with it. And we're hopeful you can just kind of deal with it, because Brenda offers so much information about the services they offer. If you or a loved one are facing a breast or gynecological issue, please call them. Their services are free and they will help you. We start the conversation with Brenda sharing her personal story with breast cancer and how she got involved with the Breast and GYN Health Project.
I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2009 when I was 39 years old and my little girl was 5. And we were living in Sacramento at the time. But I have some good friends up here and who were living up here at the time who really encouraged me to get involved with the Breast Health Project. And so, and they, you know, went to the Breast Health Project and brought back resources to me in Sacramento, and so I really became aware of how supportive the Breast Health Project was in terms of helping guide people through the process. I'll admit I didn't take advantage of them as much as I probably could have. And I think it's just because I was in Sacramento. But in the end, I ended up, you know, going through the process of treatment, and I was, you know, did the whole chemotherapy and surgery and radiation, and I had to did the infusions for a year because I was something called HER2 positive. And it was so overwhelming. And then lo and behold, a couple weeks literally after I was finished with my treatment, my husband got a job offer up here. So we moved up here probably a month after I was done with all of my treatment. And then, lo and behold, probably another month or two later, I think it was in November of 2010, there happened to be a job description opening at the Breast Health Project, or the Breast and GYN Health Project. And I read it, and it was like my dream job. I had been working previously in program evaluation and academic research and kind of dry, boring stuff. And this was just so relevant in terms of what I had just experienced going through breast cancer and not really knowing what I was doing at all and just doing what my doctors told me to do. And the job position I applied for was client services coordinator. And so that was helping to coordinate resources for people newly diagnosed. So I got the job the end of November, and what I love about the Breast and GYN Health Project is how it empowers people to be a active part of their care and treatment and decision making. We don't give advice at the Breast Health Project, but we want people to understand what their options are. And with that, I will back up and say, we really want to respect people where they are, and we kind of have a philosophy, we meet them where they are. And the reason for that is, you know, some people don't want a lot of information, and that's okay. And some people want all the details, all the research. So it's our role that we really accommodate their needs, what they're comfortable with. But what I do really like about it is, like I said, that idea of empowering people with information. You know, I was a psychology major, and I love psychology. And I remember some of the studies that were done, you know, on locus of control. And with, I think there were like some pretty awful animal studies, but they
really, sure, of course.
Yeah, right. But was, you know, one study I remember was, I think it was dogs, and they would shock them. And one group of dogs, they would give, they taught them how to turn off the shock. So there would be like a bell, and then the shock would happen. So they would know when that was going to happen. And then the other group, the bell would ring and they'd get shocked. They couldn't turn it off. And so the finding was that the stress hormone cortisol was much, much higher in the dogs who couldn't do anything about it. They'd hear the bell and they had no control to stop that, as opposed to the dogs who could tap something and stop it. And so, you know, that always reminds me of when you're empowered with what's happening with you and not just having things done to you, I think it's a lot, personally, I think it's a lot easier to cope.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like the locus of control is like, and humans too, that we have people that feel like kind of that, oh, well, like there's nothing I can do about it. Like that's just the way it is. Those people have, you know, higher stress levels, as you're saying, have, you know, higher depression, higher anxiety, whereas the internal locus of control is more like, you know, even if there's nothing to be done in the outside world, it's still like I can change my attitude. Like I can, you know, try to do other things that I can control. And so that is a big piece of it too. And like our own stress. It's such a fascinating story. Like you were in Sacramento or the Bay Area and had all these options potentially available to you. And yet where you found maybe the most comfort and most answers were like our little tiny Humboldt County, Arcata, California. And then what just like serendipitous turn of events that you just like, your husband got a job here, a job opens up. It's like your dream job. Like everything just aligned is really what it sounds like.
Oh, exactly. And that's such a good point, Juliet, that, you know, yeah, I had all these resources and there wasn't anything compared to the support groups that the Breast and GYN Health Project offers and offered at the time, or the one-on-one support, nothing like that, that I was aware of anyway. So yeah, it is really an amazing project. And the other piece to touch on is, you know, going in there shortly after I was finished with my own treatment, part of the philosophy or the mission of the Breast and GYN Health Project is the wounded healer model. And so going in as someone who had just been through all of that, and then to be able to help other people and give them and provide them with things that I wish I would have had, it was just really healing for me, and has been and continues to be, to give, to have somebody come into the project and be so upset and to be crying, and then to be able to sit with them, you know, up to an hour and offer them a cup of tea and just listen to them and hear them and provide them with whatever kind of resources they feel like they might need, is so empowering, and have them, and then have them leave and tell you, I feel so much better.
That's so rewarding. And plus, you know what that feels like, that terrifying diagnosis, you know, and just to feel so alone, to feel so scared. And like, there's so much information, there's so many choices to make. And just to have someone, you know, understand, just like you said, to have someone listen to them and just kind of walk with them on this path, that's really a huge service in so many
ways. It is. And it's nice too, like, especially now I'm, you know, 10 years out and I can say, you know what, I understand it is scary. And, you know, this is my situation, but there's hope. Don't give up. You're not alone. There's hope. This isn't, you know, a terrible death sentence that I think so many of us always have perceived a cancer diagnosis to be.
Sure.
So that's kind of, you know, it's that hope that we're giving people, and that we're going to hold your hand through this, and we're going to take this one little step at a time, and we're here for you. You're not alone, is huge for people.
Yeah. That piece about, you know, meeting people where they are. It's just like, that's so that it doesn't matter what you want for someone. It doesn't matter the information that maybe in your opinion they really need. If they're not ready for it, or it's just too overwhelming, they don't want any of it. It's like, that's their choice. We all have a choice in our lives.
Exactly. And, you know, I'll tell you, even just another more extreme example, but we have had people who have come in and have said, I have this diagnosis and I don't want to do anything. I don't want to do treatment. Or even they might not want to do chemo, or they may not just want to do anything. And that's okay. You know, we want to give them information about, I mean, I always want to make sure that people know, okay, chemo isn't nearly as bad as you think it is. It's, in my opinion, pregnancy was worse. Don't let my daughter finds that so offensive. But I want to make sure that they're not doing it out of fear, but it's a, you know, something that they feel strongly about. No, you know, this is my age, whatever. I'm okay with it. And then it's like, okay, we're here for you for that too. We'll, you know, be here to provide you with resources that you might need as you go through this journey. We'll check in on you. So I think that's, you know, like I said, meeting, and you were pointing out too, Juliet, meeting people where they are, that we don't want to come at them with an opinion of what they should or should not do.
Sure, because they're getting that from most likely every other person they're encountering.
Exactly. And I always remind them to don't listen to them, or sometimes we can even talk about, maybe you don't want to tell everybody yet, because you're going to get a lot of advice, and especially until you have a plan, until you know what you want to do, sometimes it's easier to wait for some people. So you can say, yes, I have this diagnosis and I'm, you know, having a surgery next week, and it's, you know, a cancer that's easily treatable. And so those sorts of things, it's just, I think that sometimes can be a better or easier way for some people.
Yeah. So you have been there for about 10 years, is that right?
Yep.
What, if anything, like, have you noticed like a shift in anything, or like lots of people used to come in with this question and now it's shifted to this, like anything like that, that stands out to you with people?
I think we've had more people. But I think one of the challenges that we have in this community is there's a really high turnover, unfortunately, of our healthcare providers. And so we're constantly trying to get the word out to healthcare providers to send them to us, that we can help, that we're here and this is what we do. And I also think, I was thinking about this the other day, that it's hard to convey to other people out there what we do, because, and healthcare providers too. It's, I mean, it's interesting. They'll like send somebody, call the Breast Health Project, you know, for a bra, or for whatever reason, they'll, you know, send them over. There's always various reasons, but I think you don't really understand until you come into the project and you see this warm, welcoming, safe place. And you can see, you know, our hats and our wigs, and I'll tell you more about these and things in a bit, but, you know, our medical record binders, our chemo kits, our meet us. It's such a warm, welcoming, wonderful group of people and place. It's like a second home. Mm. It's hard. So I think, I guess I'm talking more about challenges, but I do think that's we constantly are shifting and trying to re-educate our providers about what we do.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great segue of like, why don't we just launch into tell me about the services that you offer there?
Yeah, great. Thank you. You know, one of the first things we do when we were talking about the empowerment, Juliet, in terms of trying to empower people, is when they come in, we give them a tool. And that tool is what we call our medical record binder. And it's so simple, and it's you know, fairly basic, but it's a way to get them on the path of being organized and a little more in charge. And so it's, you know, we've got a calendar in there, and then we encourage them. I know this is old school. It's a paper calendar, but you can write in that calendar, you know, the date you found a lump. You can write when your first appointment was with your doctor, because when you're emotionally overwhelmed, we all become pretty forgetful. And it's hard to keep track of things. And this is one place you can have it all organized. And I will still go back to just that calendar in my binder to see when did that happen. And it's just interesting to look at. So there's a calendar. There's a place to keep the business cards for all of your providers. There, you know, there's paper to take notes. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you're like, I need to ask my doctor this. You've got a place for those notes. And then we have sections divided into, you know, everything from your doctor correspondence, pathology reports, imaging reports, you know, billing, explanation of benefits, tax receipts, for tax write-offs. So it's just a start for them. And, it, you know, people will walk out of the breast health, out of the project with just clinging that binder, like, this is my lifeline. But
right, because it is. It's like your brain in a paper book that you don't have to remember all that stuff, because there's no way to remember it, and you don't have to. You have everything right there.
Exactly. And, you know, I've also, it's embarrassing, but I probably for a couple of years had all my paperwork in a brown paper grocery bag on the dining room table. So it's really good.
I was just looking, I got something, I can't remember, oh, my registration the other day in the mail, and I was sticking my registration card in the glove box, and this is a used car that I bought from a family member, and so in the glove box is a plastic bag of all the, like, maintenance records and, like, all this stuff, and so I was like, Mom, I'm just going to stick the registration there, because this is where all the car paperwork goes, and it was like, wow, that's really embarrassing, like, to get pulled over and to have to just run it. Plastic bag, but I was like, honestly, that's the system that works for me. Like, I know it's not ideal, but that's the system that works for me.
My brown paper bag did work for a bit of time.
Yeah. And we just need to find the thing that works for me. I say that so commonly. Like, don't worry about it if it doesn't work for anybody else. It works for you.
Right. Exactly. My messy desk, it works.
So those binders, I know that we have adopted that at the Priority Care Center, because such a Dr. Mary Mangs had, you know, offered that to the Priority Care Center, and we offer the same thing. And it's so helpful to people when it's such a complicated diagnosis and there's so many providers involved.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess the other thing I forgot to mention that is part of that binder that I really like, because of, you know, my situation, remembering how things were, but it's a place to write down all of the medications that are prescribed to you, who prescribed it, when, what it's for, and, you know, notes when you should take it, because so often people, or I would look at some of my medications and still doing like, I don't know what that was. Why was I taking that? Yeah. So again, when you go through treatment, there's a lot of things you're given. And I think it's really important to know what you're being given and why.
And why.
Yeah. So that's the first great tool that we're able to give, people when they come in. And then the other really important service that we offer, and like I said, you know, telling people that we offer support is sometimes like, oh, wow, big deal.
Yeah.
So what is that? But what it is it's, you know, it's that safe place. It's somebody being there for you. It's somebody who's understands, someone who's been there. And another thing I notice so often when people, there's sometimes when people come into the project and they'll say, you know, I was just diagnosed with breast cancer or whatever, and then they'll start crying, and then they'll like say, gosh, I don't know why I'm crying. And I think they really get the sense that this is a safe place and it's okay here. I can have those feelings and these people understand. I don't have to explain myself.
Yeah. So, and people, like, what I've noticed is that when people, we just don't do a very good job, I think maybe in this whole country, but like, we just don't do a good job of like, when someone has died or someone is diagnosed with cancer or a significant, people feel so uncomfortable or with that news. And then the person who has the cancer diagnosis, they feel like they have to make us feel better. And so now it's like this added pressure. So like you're saying, you know, they come in and they feel so much relief because they don't have to do anything. Like all they have to do is share the news. And then you guys are just going to take over or like start the guiding process in a way.
Exactly. That's exactly it, Juliet. Because that's the other thing I'll sometimes share with people is I remember feeling bad for telling people. Because when you sometimes, you know, people can't help it. When they hear it, their face, they're like so upset. And I would find myself like comforting them. It's
right.
Don't worry. I'm going to be fine.
Right. Right. It's so odd. But it's, I don't know what it is. But we need to do a way better job of like just being comfortable with uncomfortable subjects.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly right. One of the other really important things that's less tangible is that we have this beautiful group of volunteers. Most of them have had a cancer diagnosis themselves, have some connection to a cancer diagnosis. And when a person comes in with a new diagnosis or even a concern, that's really important to point out too. We want to be able to help guide people who have a concern about a gynecological cancer possibly, or a breast health concern, like if they found a lump or they're having some strange symptoms. So that said, we will assign them to one of our volunteers and we call them warm miners. My understanding is that name came from, you know, similar to a hotline, but we didn't want it to be like it's a crisis, like a hotline crisis, more of a warm line because it's ongoing warm support for people.
Yeah, that's a great explanation of that.
Good. And so once they come in, we assign them, and then that person will work with the client to decide how often can I be in touch with you? How often does it work for you for me to check in on you? Can I call you next week to follow up to make sure you got that appointment? Or, you know, would it help you if I make a call on your behalf? Would you like me to do some navigation here for you to help coordinate or see if they receive your referral at the imaging center? So we can do those sorts of things with their permission to kind of do some navigation for them. But then we continue to follow that person throughout their whole journey, so to speak. You know, how is your chemo? Are you having any symptoms? And they might talk about some kind of symptoms that we'll say, I think that's really important. You should call your doctor about that. Mm-hmm. You should check in about that. So we coordinate and check up on them on a regular basis. And these volunteers we have are some of like just the kindest, most generous people I've ever met in my life. They are just such good people. And in a world that's really hard right now, yeah. It is just heartwarming, and I feel so privileged to work in an environment where people genuinely care about each other and they're kind to each other and they give and give and give of themselves. It's That's really beautiful. Powerful.
That's so beautiful. And like you said, it's like the world, it's so challenging right now in every direction you look. And then to go to work each day or to, you know, working from home, but you're working with people every day, and that it's like this inspiration every day, you know, that yes. that you're working there.
It is. Yeah. I'm just very grateful to that project. And so then, you know, jumping back to the wounded healer model again, that's, you know, kind of part of that, just what it does. In the last 10 years, I've learned so much about giving of yourself is so healing and is so rewarding. And sometimes we just need to get over ourselves.
Yeah, we need to get out of our own way. Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, it's so common to get to a place where we're so stressed or so depressed. And that's what those do. They make us look internally and overanalyze everything that we're doing and thinking, and that everyone must have it like so much better. Like these, you know, it's just whether they're reality or perceived, that's the feeling of it. And then it's like, if you can get to a place where, you know, in whatever capacity you feel like you can offer, but to help anyone in any capacity, then it's like you start to realize, it gives you perspective. It's like you now your focus is outside, you know, looking at other people, and it's just like you said, there's just something honestly magical about helping others, about giving to other people.
Yeah, exactly. So those are, that's the support we do in terms of our volunteers. And then, like I mentioned a little briefly, we have something called the breast nest. And in our breast nest, we have wigs. And let me say, all of our services are free. And they're free because we have so many wonderful, generous people in this community that donate to the Breast Health Project that we are able to provide everything without charge to people who come to see us. So thank you to our community for the money they donate, because they are making a huge difference for these people.
Gosh, I didn't realize that. I knew that it was like low cost, but I didn't realize it was actually free.
Right. So like the medical record binder that I'm talking about, and the wigs that we give, and we also give a chemo kit, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. But yeah, those, when people donate money, that it goes directly into providing these resources for our clients. So in the breast nest, we have, you know, like I said, wigs, we have prosthetics, we have bras, we have little tank tops for people to wear after surgery that are much more comfortable than, you know, a tight shirt, that sort of thing. We have scarves. We've had clients who had some really cute, creative ways to tie their head wraps or scarves. And so we can connect people with others to help teach them those sorts of things.
Those are like the little details that you wouldn't really think about, you know, like a tent that's comfortable, or just the fact of like if you had a mastectomy, and it's like, you know, on one hand, I guess from someone looking in, it's like, well, you just took the cancer out of your body. But from a woman's standpoint, it's like our breasts are like part of how we identify ourselves. So now it's like you're literally missing a piece of yourself and how you identify too.
Exactly. Right. And then to not have that symmetry. And so, yeah, one of the things we have even as a temporary prosthetic while people are healing is just like these little foam, like some are called knitted knockers, and they're just soft little stuffed knitted knockers that local people also donate. So then that gets me into... this all becomes such a rabbit hole because I get so excited about it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You're passionate about where you work. That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. but this community, again, going back to them, like there's a group of people who knit these little knitted knockers for us and donate those. There are people who donate hats, knit hats, and give those to us. There, I mean, it's just the generosity goes on and on with those things. And then our chemo kits are one of my favorites, and I'm kind of a bag person. I love my bags. And so the bag is almost my favorite part. And the reason for that is it's just a little cloth bag, but we have a woman who has been with us for many, many years, a local woman who paints the outside of the bag, and she will paint kind of our, I don't know if mascot is the right word, but we have the wounded healer, and the wounded healer is a woman. The legend goes that these women, these warriors, would cut off their breast in order to be able to draw the arrow back far enough for hunting, that sort of thing. And so that is our mascot, so to speak. And so she will paint these bags with these wounded healer warriors in different designs. So they might be Mary Poppins. She did one for me that is a Peter Pan theme. She'll do ones. I mean, she's so creative. And in fact, we have a photo album in the Breast and GYN Health Project of every single bag she's made, and they're just beautiful. They're really unique. And like I said, it's from this one single person who has painted them for years.
That's beautiful. That's a labor of love for sure. And it's like to have that story is very inspiring. Like I never really knew that that's what, you know, the little picture was for the group. And that's, it's just such a great, like what you're saying, like that resonated with me, the wounded healer. But then it's like that image and that story is very powerful, just like a warrior, like you are going through this kind of a bit of a war. And then it's like, you're going to come out on the other side.
Right. And the strength of a woman too, you know, I think that's a reminder. We all, as women, we know we're strong. We, you know, what we can do. And so, yeah, I really love that image also.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So, and then in the bag for people who are going to have chemotherapy, we have, again, another little binder with lots of information about chemotherapy, about there's forms in there like a symptom tracker. And I really like to encourage people to keep track of day-to-day after you get your first infusion or the what your symptoms are, or the second day, what your symptoms are. So like fatigue, nausea, diarrhea, all the different things that you might be experiencing. And it's on a scale of 1 to 10. And why I like to encourage them to use that is because I think it helps to go into your provider's office. But when you go see your medical oncologist, instead of saying, yeah, it was terrible, I felt awful the whole time, you can have something, again, a little more tangible that has a scale with the days. Like this was like a 9 on, you know, on nausea. This was, so that sort of thing is a good little tool for them to use in that binder.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then in addition, inside of there, we have everything from a journal so that they can be, you know, they can bring that with them and be writing their feelings and kind of processing some things. We have a deck of cards. We have a coloring book. We have a little sample of Biotene, which is a really great thing to use. There's a spray in there, a mouth spray. And the purpose or the reason we have that in there is because some of the chemotherapy drugs that are used can cause a really dry mouth or a funny taste in there. And so that Biotene really can help alleviate that. We have the hats that we have, again, other community members who regularly knit these hats for people. And the particular hats that we put in those bags are made out of a certain type of yarn and wool blend that is not as itchy as most hats are. And you don't really realize until you have no hair how itchy something can be on your bare scalp. So these hats are especially nice because of that. So anyway, there's just a wide variety of things in this bag for people. Tissue, lip, you know, some lip balm stuff, that sort of thing. And then also Humboldt Herbals. They donate a tea, and it's called Love Me Tea. It's a special blend that they put together for our cancer clients. And it has, it's, you know, made with all different kinds of herbs that are helpful in terms of boosting the immune system or helping with nausea or, I mean, they're like magic blends that they put together. And so they give those to us every single month. They donate those so that we can add those into our chemo kits.
That is just so beautiful. And every program that you're, every little step along the way, the attention to detail is so, like, things you wouldn't even think about. Like you're saying, that mouth spray or the type of yarn that's not very itchy, or this, you know, tea that's this specific blend. Like it's so, and like you're, even when you were saying before, when you walk in, it's like a home away from home. Like it just feels comforting and cozy. Like, so that's not by accident. That's a lot of people putting a lot of attention and love on those details.
Yes, that's so true. It is. Yeah, to keep it feeling so warm and homey and comfortable and safe. So I love our chemo kits. And then another little fun piece that we like to do is when people go in for surgery, we do a little investigating, and we talk to them and find out what day and where and with what doctor. And then we sneak over to the hospital the night before with a little present, and it is some socks that are handmade. We have a woman who is one of our clients years ago. She lives in Tennessee now, and she regularly makes these lovely little fluffy socks and will mail them to us, and then we wrap them up all nice and put a little card. And then the nurses, when the patient checks into the hospital, will have that little package with the nice card saying, "We're thinking of you, you're not alone. Here's the socks. And you can wear these to keep you cozy when you're having surgery and know that we're thinking of you and we're with you."
Gosh, that is so sweet. And like, even someone who has moved away, like, it just speaks to the whole community that that is your community. Someone who's moved away is still... Yeah. driven, like still has this passion of just helping others that she doesn't even know those people at all.
Right, right. Of giving back. I mean, she's a perfect example of a wounded healer, and now she's doing this and continues to donate those to our clients and to, you know, our people in our circle so that they have that and they know they're not alone.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So
who in the community is, you said that the services are free. Is anyone eligible to come in?
Everyone is eligible. It is, you know, for a breast health concern. So if there's something you're worried about, if you have, you know, maybe a family history and you're concerned and you want to, you know, have some genetic testing, they can help find where that, where you could have that done at. So something that you may think is fairly simple, that you're worried about, you can still call us and we can help you find where you need to go. Any cancer, the breast cancer, a gynecological cancer, so that's, you know, ovarian cancer, uterine, cervical. And then if you also have a gynecological health concern about something, then we can help guide you through that process as well. And yes, anybody's eligible.
Men as clients, like just as in support, or if someone said, you know, my sister or my wife or my daughter has been diagnosed with breast cancer, is that something you offer as well?
Absolutely. And thank you for remembering that for me, Juliet. yes, we do. We offer support services for support people, because that's a really hard role to be in. If it's a loved one of yours, you know, I think a lot of times partners are really overwhelmed with how to help their loved one. And it's a scary thing. They're worried about, am I going to lose this person? Or right. how am I going to manage? Or how am I going to take care of the kids? Or, you know, so we absolutely do support them in the same ways. We can help people in that, support people know what they might want to do. And this could be a friend of somebody who has cancer. This could be, you know, a daughter who wants to know, what can I do for my mom? And we literally have like little bullet list of what you can do to help, you know, how can I help? Because so often we don't know what to do. And like you were saying earlier, Juliet, we don't know what to say. If somebody dies, it becomes this taboo thing where we avoid people, whereas we want to help them know, like, you know what, you don't have to say anything. You just be there for them. So being the person who can bear witness and hear somebody, how they're feeling, and just listen, and you don't have to solve it. You don't have to say things that you don't know. How, you know, we don't know from today to tomorrow how things are going to be, but being right. that person that can listen without judgment is huge for people. And I think what means a lot to our clients is that we're consistent, we're reliable. We continue to call them, you know, and we continue to call them even after they're done with treatment, because I really think I want to make it point out that it is so important for people to remember that after treatment is often a lot harder on people than during treatment. During treatment, everybody gets, oh, she's in chemotherapy, you know, we need to be there for her, we need to bring her meals, we need to do whatever. And then everybody, we all want to celebrate when we're done, and that's great. And then everybody goes about their business.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I think the patient is often now finally having time to process what just happened, all the fears, all the emotions, the side effects that they're maybe struggling with now as a result of the cancer. So I find that a lot of our people, like in our support groups, which I'll talk about in a minute, that's where people really need support is now processing how that felt to go through that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Dr. Mary Maggs used to say that of like when the treatment's over, because it's been a job, like there's been so many things to do. You have this appointment, you have to go here, you have to do these things. You know, once you get the treatment, you're going to be resting for these many days, whatever. But then when it's all over, it's like, now what? Like now there's no calls, like now there's no appointments, like it's this void. And so like you're saying, that gives people this time to really, it's got to be this huge grieving process of right. Like what just happened? Like that was a whirlwind. And so that's a great reminder for all of us listening, is like, if you have anyone that's just gone, finished treatment, it's like, no, keep calling. Like they still need that. And for you to also be doing that as one of your services is great.
Yeah, I think that is great. And I also want to just reinforce again about the support people and partners, because it is hard on relationships. It can be. And I think it's so important for partners to communicate with each other, you know, whether you're the patient who says, it would really help me if you could do this for me, or can you just sit with me and watch a movie? I don't feel good, but I don't want to be alone. I'm scared, or, you know, whatever it is. And making sure to communicate, because I see a lot of fallout in relationships. I hate to say that, but being a caretaker is not an easy job.
Yeah, it's really challenging. There's a lot of emotion that goes along with it, because you're having your own feelings, but yet you kind of have to shove them down because you want to be there and strong for the person. But then you're having your own feelings that really aren't getting recognized. And then, you know, the person going through the treatment really isn't the person who can be supporting you. And then there's like resentment, and then it just has so many feelings for the caregiver as well. It's really difficult.
Exactly. And so that's something we can help with, and we can be the ones to, you know, if you don't want to be talking to your partner who's going through treatment, but you want to vent a little bit to someone, call us. We can, that's what we do.
Yeah. It's like a safe space. It is a safe space for everybody involved in the treatment.
Exactly. So, and then I want to just quick talk about our support groups, because the support of one another is huge. It's so important for people to have others to talk to who are going through the same thing at the same time. And we have some really great, strong support groups. We have two breast cancer support groups. One is for younger people who, and I like that we define our young women's support group as 50 and under.
Right. Perfect.
Yeah, makes some of us feel better. But, you know, the reason for that is because we find that separating that and then having that people 50 and over in another group, so often people 50 and under have similar situations where they're still working, you know, juggling their career. They have children that they're juggling. They have, you know, some different life circumstances, whereas the 50 and over, you know, some they may be more likely to have older children or children who have moved out, or they may be retired. So they have a different set of circumstances that they're dealing with.
That makes a lot of sense to split it that way.
Right. And then we have a support group for people who have been diagnosed with a gynecological cancer. We have a support group for advanced, we call it our advanced disease group. And that group is actually open to anybody who has a stage 4 cancer diagnosis. It isn't just breast or gynecological. And that one is led actually by Dr. Mary Mings, and that meets weekly. So we've got that. And then we have, before COVID, we had a volunteer-run mindfulness meditation group, which was lovely. But now with COVID, we're not doing that, unfortunately, but that will resume once life gets back on track.
Right.
And then we have a beautiful writers group. It's called Write, Heal, Love. And that is led by another wounded healer. She is just a fantastic leader. She's a fantastic writer. She's a fantastic leader. She's my favorite hugger. She's really great, and she's been so good about also accommodating people who, if they aren't able to attend, she will email them the writing prompts, and then they'll write for a little bit, and then they'll talk, and there's, you can share if you want, you don't have to share, you don't have to have any writing experience at all, it's just, it's expression, and I will say for that group, I actually attended that group for a period of time, and I found it incredibly useful. There's something to be said about writing, and maybe that's just something for me that it's easier for me to write, but it's just a different level of checking in with yourself than when we are verbalizing.
It's great that there's so many different support groups that you can just find the one that's, you know, that speaks to you.
Exactly. And those groups are all being offered on Zoom right now. So other than the advanced disease, that one, Dr. Mings will check in with people individually and they do some emailing and kind of a different setup for that particular group. But they're all on Zoom. And I will just say those ladies and those groups are some of, again, the best people I've ever met. They are just really awesome, cool people. And wow. They're so good to each other. So I highly recommend those if you feel like a support group might be helpful to you. It's comprised of some really great people.
That's beautiful. What would you say, Brenda, in your opinion, what can one person do to make a difference in their corner of the world? Like you're saying, we have so much stress, so many challenges facing us. You're providing a service to people in a crisis at times. And so it can be pretty heavy. And yet you just speak of all this one, like your face is just lighting up every time you're talking about all these services. So again, what can one person do to make a difference in their corner of the world, in your opinion?
I think, you know, kind of what we were saying a little bit about getting out of ourselves and giving to others, and it doesn't have to be anything huge, you know. I think sometimes the simplest things, like when we know somebody is going through a hard time, just reaching out and giving them a call and saying, "Hey, I'm thinking about you. How are you today? What's going? You know, would you like to go for a walk?" You know, just sometimes the simplest things, as opposed to avoiding somebody who's going through a hard time, because I think we all know when we're having a rough time, it's really hard to reach out to anybody. So being there, being present, or, you know, if there's something that you are passionate about, do it. Recently, my daughter, you know, I think makes her sad seeing a lot of the homeless people here. This is a little tangent, but she just decided that she wanted to bring food to homeless people on a Sunday. And right away, I'm like, well, maybe you should do it this way. Maybe you should, you know, and I'm starting to analyze how she should do it. And my husband kind of made me back off. And she ended up going to Costco or to Winco or wherever. And she got, you know, bread and turkey and all kinds of fixings and baby carrots and waters. And just, it was all her own idea and paper bags. And then she made 50 lunches and drove around with my husband, and she just found, sadly, 50 people on the street on a Sunday afternoon, and would walk up to them by herself and say, "Are you hungry? Do you want something to eat?" and would give it to them. And my husband was saying it just made him tear up watching her do
this.
That's
so sweet.
Yeah, and I think, you know, making a difference in your corner of the world, if it's something that means something to you, you don't have to do it a certain way. Do it the way you want to do it. So yeah, I think it can be simple. It can be a phone call. It can be reaching out. It can be, today on Sunday, I want to go give people some food.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What a beautiful example. And then just advice of, like, whatever it is, a phone call. You want to go to Costco and get a bunch of stuff and give it to people. It's like, whatever it is, it's kind of like these little acts of service in a way. And one thing I was thinking about earlier, it's like when someone's going through a hard time, you know, it's common to kind of, we don't know what to say, but the thing that I remind myself about is, like, nothing that anyone says is going to fix the problem. That's not what we're trying to do. You're just, so it's like, gosh, like, I'm so sorry you're going through that. Or, like, how are you today? Like, you know, can I drop off something for you to eat later? It's like, you know what I mean? It's like anything you do, even just the call, is going to make an impression and make that person feel just a little better, even if it's just momentarily.
Exactly. Exactly. That's so true. Or I'm just going to listen. I'm just going to bear witness to what you have to say. And yes, and I think we all have to take a step back from trying to fix things or to reassure when we don't know, which is, I think, a tendency we all have. Like, it'll be okay. You'll be okay.
Yeah, you think that's bad? Listen to this. It's like, we don't need to say anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Just listen.
Right. Just listen and don't give advice. And
yeah, right. And then the last question, Brenda, is what is your wish for our community?
I love our community so much because it is comprised of such good people. And, you know, we sometimes talk or we joke about being behind the redwood curtain or being in our little bubble up here. But my wish is that we did have some stronger resources. I worry a lot about our healthcare system here. And like I said earlier, you know, we have such a high turnover of our providers and it's hard for people to get care. And so my wish is that we could figure out a way to be better. And with that, I'll say I'm so incredibly pleased and in awe of what you guys do at the IPA. It's just really lovely, the programs that you guys are putting into place. So I wish that we had better access to care for people. I wish that we could come together and help those in need. And again, that's a homeless. It's really, I think, heartbreaking for a lot of us to see what people are going through. And I truly believe this community is good enough and strong enough and kind enough to be the community that can do that, to be stronger and to provide strong resources for our community members. And I also am finding, you know, with COVID, as hard as this has been, I think, again, there's been a lot of pearls in what we can pull or what we've learned. I mean, even like these Zoom, being able to connect, it's, for example, with our support groups, it's made me think we don't need to always have people come into the project because a lot of times they're tired, they're not feeling well, they would rather lay in their bed and, you know, support group at the same time. And that's something we can accommodate.
Yeah, I agree. I love that. That's a beautiful, you know, a beautiful wish is like, you just want everyone to have access to care. And that starts in a lot of levels. And that's what your group is doing, is that you're giving, you're providing, you're filling a void and, you know, tying a community, like bringing a community together. And so I also believe that of like, we are small enough and we're strong enough and we're resourceful enough, we're scrappy enough to figure out these problems. And that's one of the reasons I love working at the IPA, is because we're just like this little army of like awesome people that just keeps, you see a problem and then they figure it out. You see a problem, or we work to figure it out. You know, maybe we're not solving things just yet, but we're on our way. And so just so happy to be part of this community, to be so happy to be talking to people like you. It's so obvious how much you love that group and being a part of that. And so thank you, Brenda. I'm so happy to talk with you today.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you too, Juliet. And thank you for what you guys do in these podcasts. I just am so impressed what you are putting out into the community, the love and the kindness. That's what we all need to soak in a whole lot more. Oh, so I did want to mention that obviously the breast cancer awareness is the month of October, and as part of our big fundraising efforts, we have a lot of creative ways we do raise money for the Breast and GYN Health Project. And right now we have something going on that's called Sales for Survivors. You can find the list of participating businesses on our website. But what Sales for Survivors is, it's a collaboration, I guess I would say, between local businesses and the Breast and GYN Health Project, where they agree to maybe a certain percentage of their sales for one day. So there might be a particular business that says, we're going to donate 10% of our profits on Saturday to the Breast and GYN Health Project. And so we get a bunch of wonderful businesses that do that, and then we promote them throughout the month for helping to support us. So for example, Saturday I went and did a lot of shopping in Arcata because there were quite a few businesses.
Great.
That were supporting us, and it's a good excuse to go. I know Rose Gail Zolik, she's our executive director, and she goes to every single business during Christmas and does all of her holiday shopping.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So that is a really great fundraising effort that we have going on now in October. And then next month in November, we have Bidding for Good. I think it's biddingforgood.com. So we've got people who donate a bunch of really cool, unique items, and you can look on there and bid on them.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Brenda. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, Juliet. It's really cool, like I said.
Again, many thanks to Brenda and the team at the Breast and GYN Health Project and the work they do for our community. Regarding breast cancer screening, there's a lot of variance in the recommendations about when to get a first mammogram. It's reasonable for some women to start getting mammograms in their 40s. There's also value in regular self-exams, so you can be familiar with your body and be able to notice any changes. If you have any questions, talk to your healthcare provider about the risks and benefits of when to start getting mammograms. You can always call the Breast and GYN Health Project or call us at the Priority Care Center. The Priority Care Center is located on Harrison Ave in Eureka, and we provide primary care, mental health counseling, care coordination, wellness coaching to people with the following insurance types: Anthem PPO, Blue Shield HMO, Anthem Blue Cross HMO, and Blue Lake Rancheria. Thank you for listening to Humboldt HealthCast, brought to you ad-free by the Humboldt Independent Practice Association. Our host is me, Juliet Ferry. Our editor is Joseph Burkett. Original music created by Justin Locke. Our producers are Irina Essez, Jessica Osborne Staffness, Mary Nickel, Patty Torres, and Vanessa Verdiak. Special thanks to Rosemary Denouten for making this project possible. Please share, subscribe, rate, and comment. We are always looking to improve and welcome your feedback. Be part of the good, Humboldt.